Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Experience summer comfort for less. Explore our sale on curtains and bedding. Perfect time to update and freshen your home.
College fees, day 4. If you're confused on this, if you're confused about how much you have to pay, and in fairness, the language being used to explain it since Sunday afternoon is a little bit confusing, but if you're confused, why, if the government is going to bring fees down, do they have to bring fees up? That's exactly what it is in a nutshell, folks. It is a reversal of the laws of physics. This will help you remember. What is to go down must go up. Not what goes up must come down. What is to go down must first go up. Elaine, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Philip. I'm good. Thanks for taking my call.
No, thank you very much for calling. What does this jump now to €3,000 per child mean?
Well, for me, I have one. My eldest daughter is in college in Galway, and she will be going into her final year in September. And my second daughter has just completed her Leaving Cert, and she's going to be starting out in her college endeavour. So it means we're going from having to pay 2,000, which we've had over the last 3 years, to now paying 6,000 to cover the two of them. So it's a huge impact on us. We're in the squeezed middle where we qualify for nothing. We pay our tax like everybody else, and we pay a fair amount of tax. And we're not going to get any assistance on that. Now, my youngest daughter, you know, I would have always said to her that, like, your job as a secondary school student is to do the books, get the best results you can get, aim for the stars, you know, go with the course that you want to go with. And, you know, Dad and I, it's our job to think about the finances of it. So she's starting out with nothing in her pocket, really, because she hasn't had a part-time job at all. So all of her accommodation and her expenses, we'll fuel that. Now, my eldest girl, she's a great girl, and she works the summer. She works hard in the summer to help us help her.
But it's tough. Essentially, Elaine, it sounds like you're saying to them, shoot for the stars. The entire world is your oyster, just so long as it's within a 50-kilometre radius of your home.
Absolutely, Philip. Absolutely. And I said that to some of the girls this morning when I spoke to them. Like, I've always encouraged them to do their best at school, and I said to them, like, you know, there's no limitations. You pick what you can pick, you know, pick what the course you want to pick. But having said that, even before my eldest girl started college, I did have to stipulate that and say, you know, you can't go to Dublin. We're in the West, we're living down in County Clare. So I said to her, like, your options are Galway, Limerick, Cork.
Okay.
We can manage that, but Dublin is out. So they've already had restrictions.
And
you know,
did that actually have practical implications? Were there courses in Dublin that they wanted to do?
Philip, they didn't even look at them. They didn't even look at them. You know, they looked at what was available in the places that I was saying to look at. You know, we didn't even go there. And like my eldest girl, she's very bright, and she's doing a science degree, majoring in maths, and she's on target to come out with a first class honours degree.
But there's a subtext of guilt here. You're guilt at the restrictions that you're placing on them, and they're guilt at even sort of thinking about, well, God, maybe I did want to really do that thing in UCD or in Trinity, but I better not ask.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I think that kids today, they have all sorts of restrictions put on them because of the whole financial situation, the cost of accommodation, the cost of college fees, and trying to get through it, trying to come out the other end without being overburdened with fees and loans and things. And like it's difficult for them. And they're fantastic. They're great kids. Like and I don't think there's enough credit given to our young people. And our young people they're our future. This is an investment in our future, all these kids going to college. And I know somebody during the week pointed out about the fact that, you know, kids get educated and then they go away. But they don't all go. They don't all go away.
No, they
and
don't.
I'm an example
they
of that.
Don't.
I went to college myself, and I have never worked abroad. I've always worked in Ireland.
And Elaine, tell me something.
My husband has always worked in Ireland.
It's effectively €4,000 before tax that you're going to have to earn to pay for this.
Absolutely.
If you'd been given a running start at it, if you had known since the beginning of the year or since before the general election, more to the point, that this was coming down the tracks,
You could have made provision.
It wouldn't be a shock.
Because, Philip, in all honesty, like, we're just back from a holiday. Now, we don't holiday abroad every year, and this year is the third time that my family, my kids and my husband and I have been abroad on a holiday, a family holiday, and my eldest girl is almost 22.
So third time ever.
You know, my husband and this is only their third time being abroad on a family holiday
ever,
okay, this year. Yeah, absolutely ever. We holiday in Ireland, we get a couple of days here and there, we go visit family.
And are you feeling guilty about having done that now?
Well, I am, Philip, to be honest with you, because if we had known in January, we could have said, we'll hold off on going abroad and we'll just do a few local trips, maybe get to Dublin to to see some of the museums or whatever, because the kids would have been happy.
Okay, but Elaine, I have to put this in context. You have just told me that taking your third family holiday ever with children who are in their early 20s has left you feeling guilty.
Yeah. Because we now have to come up with this extra cash in September to keep my two girls, and the most important, like, they have worked so hard to get to where they are. They deserve this chance to educate themselves and have a career. And I'm so adamant that they have a career, that they can build a future. And
of course,
I want them to build a future in Ireland, and they want to build a future in Ireland. And it's not, it should be given to them, and it's not easy, it's not easy to keep it all going, keep all the balls in the air and juggle everything,
Now, one of the things that all of the government spokespeople on this have been saying is apply for a Susie grant. The thresholds have been raised. Did you?
Yeah.
Would you?
A very good friend of mine who has a daughter doing a course, and she's going into third year. And I discovered that when she applied for the Susie grant, that this year they were only awarded €500 based on their income last year. Now, I'm in a fortunate position. My husband, he works very hard and he has a good paying job. I work part-time myself. I do 20 hours a week. So when mine is added onto his, I just think to myself, we haven't a hope in hell of even getting €500.
Okay. And apparently it's a PhD level process to figure out how to even apply
to do
for the Susie grant.
As a first timer doing it, I know I would, it's not made easy. It's not made easy,
Do you think the people making this decision are out of touch?
I think the people making this decision are definitely out of touch. And, one question I asked one of your researchers this morning is, how much is James Lawless earning? And like a TD earns somewhere in the region of 115,000 per annum. I'm not sure how much a minister earns.
An additional 94,000 for a senior minister.
Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing money, and fair play to him. Fair play to him. I wouldn't begrudge him. But he's not living in the real world. Yeah. He's not living in my world and a lot of people's world.
And the real world where you can possibly, because it's your children's education and it's a very important thing to you, you can possibly find that €4,000. You just can't do it like that over the course of the summer.
By hook or by crook, if we have to take out a loan, we'll take out a loan. You know what I mean? But it's hard. It's not easy because we still have to have a roof over their head, and we have to make sure that they have a bit of pocket money to come and go. And I know that when they are earning my second girl like this, that when she is earning next summer, and hopefully we'll be able to get her some kind of a summer job, that, you know, she will save that, you know, and she will help us help her.
Well, it sounds like she wants to help pay her own way as well.
She does, you know. And
before I move on, one kind of key question here. Did you vote for the government? Would you vote for the government again?
I would have voted for the government, but I'm done. I'm done, Philip. I really am. I don't think that we get a lot of lip service from the government, but I don't think they actually listen to us. They're not hearing us. And I work in a small engineering company and I deal with customer complaints. And one thing that I have learned over my time here is that it's very important to listen to people when they have an issue. But I don't think our government are listening to the people on the ground. And that will come back and bite them, I think, at some point.
Stay here, because I know you're going to want to talk to Rachel as well. Rachel, good afternoon. Yes. How are you?
Good afternoon, Philip. How are you?
I'm really good. I suspect I'm in a slightly better position than you, though, because mine are still in secondary school. When did you first hear this news about the fees?
I heard it on Sunday. I was with my husband in the car and I heard James Lawless mention the increase in the fees, and I got a serious shock. I couldn't believe it. I am in a difficult situation. I do sympathise with that other lady who was on the call as
Elaine.
Well, because Elaine, she's in a difficult situation too. I'm living in Dublin, lucky to be living in Dublin. I have four boys. I have two boys in college at the moment. One is going into the final year, and I have another boy. He's into his second year. I have another boy finishing school this year, hoping to get into college.
Oh my God!
Last year we had fees of €6,000. Okay, that's difficult enough to cope with. This year, at the drop of a hat, it's nobody thinking. It's gone up to 9,000. So, yeah, you know, with no free warning, absolutely nothing. On the radio, we hear this news coming through.
Hang on a second, Rachel. Is it not worse than that? Did you not have fees of 4,000 last year?
Last year we had 4,000.
Yeah, okay, and now it's going to be 9,000.
Potentially,
if my third boy gets in, and please God he will. I've always encouraged him to do well in school. I was in college myself, and, you know, that's what you want for your kids. You want the best for them.
So that's £5,000 after tax, which is a lot more before tax that you have to find in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, just like that. Like, you know, it's not the real world these people are living in. Think that people are just going to have that kind of money, you know, behind the sofa, hidden away. It's not reality. You know, feeding children these days, the cost of bills, electricity bills, you know, gas bills, everything is going up, nothing is going down. You go to the shops, you go to any supermarket, you know, you're looking for the best deals here, there and everywhere. Discounts on this, discounts on that. It's not easy.
Okay.
You know, bills are going up. Everything is rocketing all the time. Nothing is coming down. And then you're hit with this out of the blue.
And Rachel, explain to me, when you pay the fees contribution, you can, as the government keeps on saying, you can do it in installments. But that first installment has to be 50% or more of the fees, does it?
I think it's something like that. Yeah, it is.
As far as I know, Philip, it is 50%, yes.
It is, Elaine, is it?
It is. You can do it in two installments. I think there's one due by the end of October and the other then in January.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, to be honest with you, Philip, even though I've only been paying £1,000 for my eldest girl, that's the way I've done it. I haven't given them the two.
Absolutely. I understand
it.
But you could only choose to pay them more. You can't choose to pay less. You can't box clever on this and wait and see if there's going to be something done in the budget that'll make things easier come January.
You know, the government needs to reverse this decision. It's been a mistake of a decision that's been made, and they need to reverse it, because people just cannot afford, you know, to hear that on the radio and to think that people have that kind of money to pay in a few months' time.
You were working, Rachel, on the assumption that it was going to be 2,000, and that if, fingers crossed, child number three does get a college place, that this was dealable with. But this is now put it beyond the pale, has it? Rachel? Oh, I think that something happened to Rachel's line. Let me bring in Nicola. You're back, Rachel. Go on.
It's Elaine here, Philip. But it's like the impact on Rachel is massive. Like, it really is, you know. It's a huge jump for them, you know.
Yeah. And Rachel right would not be the only person in the world with a couple of offspring who are that close in age who will all be going to college at the same time.
Absolutely.
Let me bring in Nicola. Nicola, how are you?
Hi there, Philip. How are you doing?
How many have you going to college in September?
Three.
Ouch, the trifecta.
So we face a bill of €9,000 for registration fees alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the point needs to be made that the registration fees are the tip of the iceberg of the expense that families face if they are, you know, if they're trying to get their children into third level. And they are young people. I mean, my youngest is 18. She's not a worker. She's a student. She's worked hard. She's done a PLC to try to access third level. And she doesn't have €3,000. And nor would I expect her to have it. But that's the pressure that is now put on the young people, that they have to come up with this money. And I think it's very disingenuous of the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach to say yesterday when they were asked about the issue that you don't have to pay it all in one lump sum. You know, you can spread it out. That makes no difference. The bottom line remains the same. It has to be paid, and it has to be paid in the current academic year. I think it is an absolute own goal by the government if they let this happen. I think it's completely unfair. I think it's targeting that element of the squeezed middle families that are paying taxes, working hard, their children. You don't get into third level just by chance. You have supported them all the way through their education, and they have worked hard and they have ambition. But why would you put such a massive impediment in their way?
And have you had to in any way fix, Nicola, a limit to that ambition and tell them, look, no, I'm sorry, you just can't go there. We're not going to be able to afford that. This course is going to be out of reach for you.
Oh, we have. And we've also put colleges that are not, you know, where they might have to travel to out of out of reach, because I mean, and friends of mine, and this has to be also considered for the majority of students that are travelling from regions within the country, the west or south of Ireland, that are not living in commuting distance. And might I say, because of accommodation, many students are getting up in the morning and travelling from outlying counties into university cities, which is really terrible and shouldn't happen.
I know.
You're looking at paying another 10,000 per student per year in accommodation. Then you have to give them an allowance for the month and their transport costs.
The accommodation thing takes an impossible problem and it makes it just completely unsolvable. Yeah. But Nicola, same question to you as I put to Rachel and to Elaine. If you had had a running start at this, if you had had notice and you had known that they were going to be at €3,000, you know, from the start of the year or before, would you be able to deal with it? Would you have been able to plan your way through this?
We certainly would have had to make the allowance for it. But the timing of this, I mean, I actually didn't believe my ears when I heard of it and how it was announced by the minister. I think it's very sinister that the timing is now. The Dáil is about to go into its summer recess. Yeah. You know, people are away on holidays. The focus is off. You know, in media, they call this time the silly season because there's just, you know, there's nothing really to report on. But that's the problem. We are going to be left now. I mean, I've thought of nothing else really since I've heard that announcement. And I've looked at the numbers, and my husband and I have sat down and thought, €9,000, that's €18,000 that we have to earn to pay that.
Indeed. And Nicola, has this changed your...
It was a real relief to get them, to get it the last 2 years. And I don't think that it is unreasonable for it to be continued this year.
Has it changed your political allegiances, Nicola?
Oh, I mean, you have, yes, 100%. I just am so disillusioned. I didn't think I could bring up anything.
Can I ask you the question?
But I think that many of the families would have voted for the parties that are currently in government. And I would say many of those families are thinking, well, you know what? Enough is enough.
And would student fees and the fact that they had been down for 3 years in a row been one of the things that would have made you put the X beside a government TD?
Correct. 100%.
It was, okay.
And the fact that in the government, the manifesto said that they would look to continue to reduce and eliminate those fees within the lifetime of the government. And as that mum said earlier on in the week on Monday, she said, you know, families don't live in the lifetime of a government. They live in the here and now. They live from week to week, month to month. We don't want any fee reduction in the lifetime of the government. We want the situation, the status quo, to remain. It was hugely helpful because we had two students in third level last year, so our bill was 4,000, not 6. This September, it'll be 9.
So this first going up in order to come down makes as little sense to you as it would make in the laws of physics as well. Look, I have a bit of good news, a little bit of good news that is absolutely news to me, but it just shows you when you go rooting around in citizensinformation.ie, which absolutely brilliant and vital site for living in the world in 2025, there is some good news for people in your situation with more than one child in university. I'm going to read directly from it, okay? If you are claiming for more than one student, you will get full tax relief, 20%, on tuition fees, including the student contribution for second or subsequent students. So full whack for number one, but in your case, ladies, two and three will get 20% off on the tuition fees. Before that, you get nothing on the first 3,000. So if you have two students paying 3,000, you get €600 back. Does that possibly take a little bit of the sting out of it, Nicola?
No. No.
Why not?
I'm sorry, but... Well, I just don't think it's enough. I think it's an insult, really, to be honest. I don't think that is good enough. 50% of students are availing of the SUSE grants, and there's a whole cohort of students that are being supported at third level. But what about the other 50%? It should be fair and equitable. It should be a level playing pitch. It is not.
Okay.
And I am so furious with the whole thing, and I will definitely be reassessing where my political allegiance lies. The timing of it, the disregard that the Taoiseach and Taoiseach made in their commentary about it, you know, it's just too much for parents. And, you know, to be feeling guilty about having taken your family holiday, and we took a family holiday as well, and thankfully all our children went with us and they wanted to go with us. You know, we only went for 7 days. We don't go any other time. And I'm looking now thinking, well, that's the end of any other discretionary spending for the rest of the year. And that's not a moan, right? Because there'll be people out there who say, well, I got no family holiday. The bottom line is, we got this allowance for the last 2 years. There is scope here. It should not have happened this way. And the other point that really irks me is that parents have no voice. Parents and guardians at third level, even at second level, there is no proper structured lobby group that can represent us. We just have to come out and fight for whether it's, you know, one issue or the other.
Okay.
And it's all the mums on the phone this week, you know, really worried about how they're going to balance family budgets going forward, when we should be celebrating the fact that, and I am hugely grateful that I will have three children that will have
the only stress now should be Leaving Cert Results Day and CAO Announcements Day. It should not be stressed about anything else at all. So, look, more mums and dads on this. But right now, Nicola, Rachel, Elaine, thank you very much. I'm going to take a break.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Fiona, hello, how are you? Fiona,
hello, Philip, how are you?
Can you hear me there?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can. There's just a little bit of a delay. We'll have to be careful not to talk over each other. Tell me, how are you going to go and get Castro home?
Well, this summer I have no problem because I'm in Brussels for work, and Castro is here with me in Brussels. And we have booked, I don't have a car here in Brussels, and we have booked to go via Stenaline, which is no problem for a foot passenger. I will go by train from Brussels to Paris, from Paris to Cherbourg, and then by ferry with Stenaline from Cherbourg to Rosslare. And then I'll get a lift because, unfortunately, in Ireland on public transport, I can't bring my dog.
Castro is a dog, we should say. Just in case there's anybody wondering, where is this conversation going? Who is Castro? Why doesn't he have agency in this conversation? Castro is a dog. How long has he been in your life?
Castro has been in our life since 2021. We got him just towards the end of COVID from Dogs Trust. He was a stray and
well
we were
done.
Very lucky.
Well done. Well done. And you have held on to him, and how important is he in your life?
Oh, very important, because working from home, as many people do now, it could be alone and not see anybody or speak to anyone. So it gives me a reason to get out of the house. I get out in the morning. We have a little doggy club in the morning in my local park here in Brussels, where I get to meet people at 7:30 and the dogs socialise and I socialise and try to learn a little French while I'm doing that.
Okay. So anyway, Stena Line, Cherbourg, Ross Lair is about to go bye-bye, leaving you on the horns of a dilemma.
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't believe it when I saw the announcement because I had done a lot of research. I brought Castro over here with me from Ireland in 2023, and I did a lot of research before I made that decision, and Stena Line was the one ferry company recommended by everyone who has experience doing it, for either for work travel like myself or for holiday travel to France and beyond. And they were highly recommended. The service is excellent. They have pet cabins. They have, I think, about 40 pet cabins on their big boat. But also, they're the only ferry company that allows foot passengers to bring a pet on board. So Castro's between 12 and 14 kilos. So there's no way I could carry him in a crate or anything like that. So he walks alongside me. He can wear a muzzle if required for safety. But other than that, there's no problem.
So Brittany Ferries don't take any animals under any circumstances at foot passengers at all. Irish Ferries say, yes, you can, but the dog has to be in a hard case carry on. And that's something that, I suppose that becomes about 20 kilos in weight, doesn't it, when you add it and Castro together. So that's a bit not a possibility.
It's just not feasible, because I'm coming from Brussels. So I take the train from Brussels to Paris, and there's no problem for the dog to be on the train, and the conductors are usually really friendly to the dog, to be honest. And then I have to walk about 40 minutes to the other train station to transfer to Cherbourg, which is fine with a dog. After being on a train, he's very happy to walk, and I'm happy to walk the 40 minutes, but there's absolutely no way I could carry a case.
Can I say, Fiona, number one, I really admire your commitment to rail and sail and doing it properly. But obviously, the Irish Ferries option here would mean that you have to leave the suitcase at home and carry the dog carrier on your back and Castro on the lead.
I mean, it potentially, but I mean, those dog carriers are quite heavy and they're bulky. So getting on a train, I mean, in the summertime, the trains in France, I don't know if you've ever traveled on them, but they're quite packed. So it's, it would be quite an inconvenience. I don't even know if it's actually feasible, not just an inconvenience. It's quite difficult to do.
How dog friendly is Brussels? It never even occurred to me to think about this. But from what you're saying there about the attitude on the trains, Brussels sounds reasonably open or amenable to man's best friend.
Brussels is doggy heaven, I have to say. Dogs are protected as a member of the family here under some court case from years ago.
Go away, really?
So there's no problem having them. There's no problem having them in an apartment. There's no problem bringing them into restaurants. 90% of restaurants. He travels on the metro, on the tram, on the bus. Absolutely no problem.
Wow, that's quite a contrast then, I suppose, to here.
Absolutely, yes. There's no very few restaurants in Ireland allow dogs, and it's quite a change, because he literally comes everywhere. If I go for brunch on a Sunday to meet my friends, on a Sunday morning, he comes along. If I go, to the pub, he comes along. Now, he doesn't particularly like noisy places, so this time of year we'll sit outside usually. But you know, it's feasible for him to join. He comes along wherever he can.
If you were to get a lift, or if you were to get a car yourself and board an Irish Ferries or a Brittany Ferries sailing, would it be different?
I have. I mean, this is not a financial issue. I've decided not to have my car in Brussels, number one, because the steering wheel is on the other side, so for safety, but also because I just don't need one here. the public transport is fantastic, and I feel my carbon credits are high enough, my carbon footprint is high enough with the flying that I do for work, so that, you know, I'm kind of paying a little bit back by not having a car here. And I mean, financially, it's still very expensive to come back and forth on the train and the ferry. It's still, I think, about 800, maybe more, all in with the train tickets as well for the round trip. It's not a cheap option. So I don't think the car would make any difference, you know, financially. But it's more that it's a lifestyle choice here in Brussels that I don't have a car.
Is it a little bit annoying that you aren't better rewarded for doing the right thing?
Oh, it's extremely annoying. That's why I contacted you. Absolutely. I mean, from my understanding, this ferry is very busy. It's booked. You have to book way in advance to get the pet cabins. And they're booked out now for July and August. So I'm not really sure what the business decision is that they've decided to take this ferry off the route, because I'm, you know, there's many travellers, not just Irish people, going, you know, to the continent with their dogs, and there's many people who do, but also people coming from Europe to Ireland in camper vans and various other vehicles that are coming with dogs, but they stay in pet cabins because you're 18 hours on the boat. Coming from Cherbourg. So to leave a dog in a kennel, lots of dogs get very stressed and they don't like to be in the kennel. So you can have them in the cabin next to you. So it's a great facility, that Stenaline office.
So the options are either get a car, and you've explained why it is that you don't want to do that. The other option would be to go to Zeebrugge and get a Stenaline to the UK, travel by train up to Scotland, and then get a Stena across to Belfast, and then drive down to Dublin.
I'm not sure that dogs are allowed. I think the UK have a similar attitude as Irish public transport.
All right.
So I don't even think that's possible.
All right, so that's not possible. What about planes? And I know the answer from your point of view, given how carbon footprint conscious you are, is going to be, but are you allowed on any of those short-haul flights to put a dog into the hold?
That is a feasible option, but not with Irish Airlines. It's quite pricey with Aer Lingus, and they don't really encourage it. But Castro would have to go into the holes due to his size. And there is an option with KLM to go from Amsterdam to Dublin. But it's about double the price, I think. But not just that, it's quite stressful, and I would worry because Castro was a stray. He does get a little bit anxious. With loud noises and when he's left alone, because, you know, he had a troubled past. So I don't know if it would really stress him out to be in the hold. You know, it's very noisy and not a pleasant place for anyone to be,
and
I think.
Is he there right now with big brown eyes looking up at you and in any way aware of all of the fuss that he's causing?
Every time his name is mentioned, yes, he's looking around, waiting for me to throw him a ball.
Where did the name Castro come from?
It's like Fidel Castro, but Fido Castro.
Oh, very clever. Well done. Okay. Well, Fiona, I don't have an answer for you, but let us put it out there to the hive mind, 51551, if anybody can please make a suggestion to how it is that Fiona can do this without doubling, trebling, quadrupling her carbon footprint. How do we get Castro home? Fiona, thank you very much for the call. Take care of yourself.
Thanks a million, Philip. Take care. Bye-bye.
Now, you will have at this stage, I think, heard the incredibly sad news of the passing of Father Kevin Crowley from the Capuchin Day Centre. I'm joined by his long-term friend, Father Brian Shortall. How are you, Brian?
I'm good, Philip.
A lot to process, I'd imagine.
Yeah. It's a sad day. It's a sad day for his family, and it's a sad day for we friars, his brother friars, It's a sad day for the many people who access the services of the homeless, the day centre for homeless. It's a sad day for many people who worked in sort of those services, you know, in Ireland, in Dublin and so on.
There's many tributes already been paid to his legacy, Brian. Many tributes already into the short space of time. But before we do that, just talk to me about him a little bit. Had you seen him recently? How was he?
Yeah, I was there. I tell you, it was about 2 days before the death of Pope Francis, who he met in 2018, and we all met luckily.
Of course.
But I was down there, so it's about 5 weeks ago or so, and he was in good form. Now he had just laid down on the bed just after lunch, and he wasn't the strongest. He was weak enough, but he was in great form, and he was asking how things were and how the family was and how are things in Dublin. He'd say, "How are things above?" This kind of stuff, you know. So he was looking for kind of news about the Dublin scene, and you know, he was an honorary Dub. He was a free man of Dublin, but he was a proud Cork man, you know, very proud Cork man.
And as he faced what has now happened, how accepting of it do you think that he was? Was it something that he had embraced?
Oh, I believe so. I believe Kevin was in the kingdom, and I don't mean the kingdom of Kerry. But I mean the kingdom of heaven. I believe that Kevin was in the kingdom of heaven for a long time. He was a proud friar. He was a church man. He was a man of God. He was a man of prayer. You know, we need to remember that. Like, he said his prayers. He got up very early every morning and said his rosary and said his the office with the friars. And you know, he let that spill over into his interaction with people, particularly with those who are most in need. So you know, he had one eye on heaven all the time. I mean, I remember one story. He wasn't well one of the evenings in Church Street, and he kind of laughed and said, "You know, I'd love to die." And I said, "What?" Well, he said, "Yeah, I'd love to go to God." He said, "I think I've done enough now." And you'd kind of wonder sometimes whether he hopping the ball a bit, you know, because he's such a love of life. But I do believe that he was someone who genuinely believed in, you know, another world, in a better place. You
know? Which must have made it all that much easier. Alan Bailey, mm-hmm. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. How are you?
Ex-Detective Garda, you worked very, very closely with them again for a long time. It must be an awful lot for you to process today as well.
It is really and truly. I first met Kevin as long ago as 1972.
And from
that day on, I've served in some capacity over here in the centre, either as a volunteer or as a director or latterly as a manager of it. And then in that time, we got to know one another very well, but we also became very close friends, and he's a very, very good friend to my family. He's a man to be sadly missed by all of us here.
How did you first meet Alan?
Well, would you believe I was on duty at a particular house one night, and a local house, and Kevin was a bit annoyed that this person was getting protection when another person wasn't. The aggressor was getting protection as opposed to the victim. So he came over and he told me in no uncertain terms. And then he says to me, "You're new in the drive, aren't you?" I said, "Yes, Father, I'm only here a couple of days." Well, he said, "Hey, do you drink?" I said, "I take a bad drink." Well, he said, "You're drinking days and you come up to walk in the centre."
So hang on. He took you to task for the person that was that you were protecting. Nothing to do with you. Yeah. You were just following orders. And then he said, "Come on up for a drink."
No, come up for it. Give up the drink.
Oh, give up the drink. Sorry.
No. He was very much into getting young men, in doing walking side here in the centre. And I suppose it's something to stay with us over all the years. It's amazing the effect his death has had on the people coming in here today. It's like a pall over everybody. And we have a little altar, as it is, in the front hall where people come in and between people blessing themselves and kissing the photograph of Kevin. It's a lovely thing. It's a lovely thing to see.
All right. Father Kevin Crowley, may he rest in peace. And from everything that you're saying, Father Brian, it sounds like he knew that he was going to the best place for your eternal rest. Thanks both very much for joining us, Alan Bailey and Brian Shorthall, with those memories of the late Father Kevin Crowley.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Hannah Cree, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi there. Thank you very much. Yes, all good. Thank you.
How many years were you married when Adam first started to go deaf?
Oh, good question. So we got married in 2009, and then Adam first started losing his hearing in 2022. So what's that?
And who noticed first, you or him?
It was actually he noticed that my speech was quite quiet, so he thought that I had an issue with my hearing. So he asked me to get my hearing checked because I was speaking quietly in the house.
You're young. He was obviously young as well.
Yeah, he was 33 at the time.
Okay. And what was it that you noticed, that he noticed, and how did this progress?
Yeah, so I think in 22 he had complained about my speech being quiet, and then it had been a very busy year that year. I got my hearing checked, it was okay, and he was learning to drive, starting a new career in ministry, and we just sort of got on with it. And then in 2023, I realised I was repeating myself a lot to Adam, and I encouraged him to go and get his hearing checked too.
And what did they find?
Yeah, so straight away he had 30 to 40 decibel loss, which was significant for his age, and on his first appointment was offered hearing aids.
And then at every subsequent checkup and appointment, it was getting worse, was it?
That's right. So that was August 23. And then we went for sort of 3 monthly reviews at that point. And every time it was just decreasing, to a point then that the audiologist wrote a letter to the GP to ask for further help. By then March 24, Adam was profoundly deaf. Okay. With a loss of 100 to 120 decibels.
Now, spoiler alert here, there is no explanation for this. We're not going to be able get to the bottom of it. This is really a story about how it is that you learn to cope. What was the first big thing to overcome there, Hannah?
Yeah, so I think once we got over the initial, there's nothing, scary health-wise. You know, we brain scans and MRIs and things like that, we realised that we just had to run with it then at that point. And for us, it was really about keeping up momentum of communication at home, in our church, with our friends, with our family, and making sure that Adam felt included in every setting that we were in.
What was it that had brought you together first as a couple? Were you, chatty, verbal people bouncing off each other, or were you both just immensely attracted to each other and stood there looking silently at one another?
So we met each other in a house share. We actually met through Gumtree because I moved into a house that Adam lived in. And where Adam went, he came with a guitar in hand. And wearing a flannel shirt and was always playing his guitar. We were always good communicators, really enjoyed conversation with each other, enjoyed music, enjoyed going out. I guess when I look back now, I'm glad that we had that foundation of communication, because it just meant we have that again now, but we've just had to find a new way.
And what is that new way? Is it the same?
I'd say it's very different. So we had actually started at the beginning of 2024 going to a sign language class. I have always wanted to learn sign, and Adam thought it was a bit pointless, to be honest. He had started wearing hearing aids, but we never imagined that he was going to be at the point of ever being profoundly deaf or in need of sign language. So to be honest, we took it as a bit of a date night and went for 5 weeks and learned some sign, and then more and more realised that we were in a position we had to rely on it. And so it's been slow, I guess. Adam has been watching a lot of TV in BSL. I was exhausted to begin with, but now very much it has become our second language.
Is it like a language, though, Hannah? I mean, or is this harder, that you would say, than learning Spanish or French?
I would say I wish I understood more about it before now. It is an incredible language of its own right. It has a different grammar sequence. It, for people who are deaf, their first language is not English, so it has a whole different foundation. And it's so expressive. It's a beautiful alternative language, and I wish I had have learned it before.
Can you express yourself with the kind of the nuance and the tonal subtleties that are required in a marriage at times to overcome difficulties?
Yeah, so I guess context is always really important. So setting context, I would have had the tendency to bounce from one conversation to another, before, whereas I can't do that now. You have to set out the context of what you're wanting to speak about. But also, it can be very tiring for a deaf person to communicate. So I would choose what I'm going to talk to Adam about. However, he has neurological symptoms as well, so that does add another barrier. But yeah, I guess like arguments and things like that, we actually find that that's easier in sign language because you slow everything down. You're more likely to say exactly what's needed and not say something.
I was just going to say, more importantly,
thinking.
Not say the thing that you're going to end up regretting. And can you do things like irony and sarcasm and humour, or is that something that you communicate with your facial expressions?
Oh, absolutely. We have met some amazing deaf people and the sense of humour in the deaf community is amazing. It's most definitely part and parcel of the expressive nature of sign language. It very much relies on your facial expression as well, so and lip reading. There's a lot of use of sarcasm and jokes and humour within the deaf community, absolutely.
So do you feel as connected as you were in the stage before he started to go deaf?
Yeah, I think probably even more so. You know, there's a vulnerability for someone who is relying on the people around them for communication. And that's been a very careful thing to tread as a wife, to make sure that Adam still feels empowered and part of part of the different groups he's involved in, part of conversations and has a voice. I would say you actually become even more tuned in to each other through sign language because you're watching so tentatively to make sure that you don't miss opportunities where he wants to jump in or have a say.
How have the kids fared with sign language?
Yeah, amazingly. Our daughter has found it difficult. She's left-handed, where our son spends a lot of time with Adam at football, and so he's had to use it a lot more. And he is a goalkeeper for a football team, so would find it very useful to sign across the football pitch to Adam at the sidelines. But also it's the things about deafness that we don't understand until we are introduced to it. You know, crossing the roads, not hearing cars, walking around in shops and not hearing if there's someone behind you. You know, all those things, going through an airport. Elijah, our son, has been just amazing at being Adam's right-hand man and, you know, pulling him out of the way if he needs to move, paying for things at shops and helping him cross roads and things as well.
How does Adam deal with that? Because it does sound quite disempowering.
Yeah, I would say that Adam's really inspirational through it all. You know, it's a huge loss for someone who's been hearing previously to lose their hearing and become deaf. We've just kept, again, communication open and we try things and then we'll come back to it and say, did that work or what could we do differently? And we try again in a new way. I would say that actually Adam has really identified with himself as a deaf person. He feels quite comfortable.
Does it mean, though, that his circle has effectively narrowed or closed down to just the four of you, or are any of his friends, extended family members learning sign language as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'd say this has taken time. At the beginning, it felt very, very isolated, very lonely, because nobody could communicate with Adam except for through me. And now people have realised that this is permanent, it's irreversible, it's not going away, and we need to find new ways. So family are learning, friends are learning, our church has been learning. There's been 60 people learning BSL at church, also that they can include Adam and also open the door to more people in the community who are deaf and give them equal access to the same services that hearing people have.
You said at the start when you met him that he was a guitar player. Is music completely lost to him now?
Yeah, so he would explain it that music that he knows he can listen to and vaguely hear parts of the beat or feel parts of the beat, and then he can fill in the gaps. But as a musician previously, the beauty of all the intricacies of music is lost. so he can't enjoy a new song.
Would he pick up the guitar and even bash out one of his old favourites, even though he can't hear it?
No, he could, but he has hearing aids that only work at a one-to-one sort of setting, but the hearing aids give a very synthetic, unnatural sound, and he misses that tone of the guitar, so actually can't really bring himself to play.
And what is it that he does in the car when listening to music?
So in the car, he will play the music and play it loudly, and the vibrations of the music he can feel either on the dashboard or the steering wheel. And again, if it's a song that he knows well, he'll pick up what it is and enjoy the music in that way.
That's great. Okay. So
it's amazing.
I hope he's doing this as a passenger now with both hands on the dashboard and not.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's been times, you know, again, back in the church environment, a church is a very hearing place. You know, you think about singing, you think about prayer, you think about teaching. But Adam has been able to put his hand on a pane of glass or a window to feel the vibrations of the music in some circumstances too. So again, it's an incredible way that your body does adjust.
Obviously, between the lines, I'm picking up that your faith means an awful lot to you. Has it been a help?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know where we'd be without God. Absolutely. We see purpose in this. And if anything, it's about opening the doors, understanding what we never understood before, about how difficult it is to be a deaf person in society.
You see purpose in this, and that's a really admirable glass half full way. But I mean, there must have been points where you or Adam were saying, God, why else?
Yeah. Yeah, there's days, and there's definitely days. But I think for us, we are probably glass half. We want to make use of it and take opportunity to raise awareness, bring other people in and tackle loneliness in our community throughout the deaf community. So yeah, we have days, don't get me wrong. And there are days where we think about the future, we think about things that will be different. You know, we think about our kids getting married or things down the line that will forever now be different. But we can't change that.
What is the one thing, Hannah, that I or anybody else in the hearing community can and should do, and that we're insensitive to on the part of deaf people, that would make your life and Adam's life and everybody else who doesn't have hearing or is hearing impaired just a little bit better?
One thing's hard. I've maybe got a couple, if that's okay.
Okay, no, go on, away you go.
The best thing is to be aware and be patient. Take time with people and to see deaf people as people in their own right with amazing personalities and character experience. And to really think about what you are involved in the community. How can you make that more accessible? And to learn a bit of sign, even to fingerspell, know how to do your alphabet. That's the best start, because then you can fingerspell anything. And there are some websites online, National Deaf Children's Society and another called the Deaf Umbrella, have been particularly helpful to us as a family to understand more about deaf culture and deaf awareness.
When you say deaf culture, was this community one that was tight-knit and hard for Adam to break into, or were they very accepting immediately?
Yeah, not at all. Very accepting, very loving. Really helpful. You know, the amount that we have learnt about in sign from deaf people in our community. You know, even on a Monday night now, we've started a deaf community, a sign language community, and we've had a number of deaf people who've come in, rolled up their sleeves and said, how can we help? What do you want us to do? So all welcoming. And honestly, if you want to try to communicate with a deaf person in public and you try a bit of fingerspelling, they will be so grateful. Yeah. That you have tried.
I have two colleagues who made a documentary series within the deaf community, and the director and the cameraman say that there was obviously so much fun being had, and there was such good humour amongst all of these people, usually at the expense of Michael and Gary, cameraman and director, and very obvious that people were having a, a good old laugh with furious sign language behind their back. This isn't a community of people who see themselves completely disadvantaged. This is, you know, their world, and they're going to live in it.
Yeah, there was a story that that someone shared with me about a little boy who was deaf, and he was reading a conversation in sign language through a bus window in another bus beside them, and had said to the interpreter about the conversation that was happening across the way, and he couldn't understand that hearing people can't read a conversation from across a room or between panes of glass between buses or vehicles. That is a superpower, you know, and I think I can't unsee now what the barriers are for deaf people in our community and what they add, and I just want to get deeper into that, and I'm excited about what we could do.
So learn to fingerspell the alphabet is a really, really good place to start, and will open a huge number of doors, not just for the hearing impaired or the deaf people, but for you too.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. It's the best thing. It opens up conversation. It makes people feel seen. And it empowers you too to meet new people that you mightn't have ever had a chance to before.
Hannah Cree, it has been a pleasure talking to you, and please do give our best to Adam. Obviously, it would have been lovely to talk to him as well, but that's not something that we can achieve on a phone-in programme. But thank you very much for your call.
Thank you very much for the time. Really appreciate it.
Take care and best to Adam.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Back to the college fees that are going to go down, but must first go up in order to go down. Geraldine McNamara, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, Philip. How are you?
How many do you have in college, Geraldine?
Philip, I have one girl who's just finished first year in college, and my second girl is just after doing her leaving cert. And we were just filling out her CAO form yesterday. You know, and we're just looking at the cost of college and hearing now, like last year we got the €1,000 off the fees, which was a good help. My eldest daughter is in college in Galway. We live in South County Clare, so she had to live there. So we had to pay, obviously, for accommodation. So the €1,000 did help a lot. We had to pay €15 fees. But my other girl who wants to go to college this year and has filled out her CAO form, she's hoping to do a course in Cork. And so we would end up in a situation where we're paying fees for both of them and accommodation for both of them, which is quite a significant amount of money. You know, so my issue is not just this reintroduction of the, you know, taking away the €1,000 that they took off last year, but I have a whole problem with the way Susie is applied and with the bans for Susie. I just think it's, you know, it takes absolutely no cognizance of your actual available income.
Well, let's deal with one thing at a time. Can we come to Susie in a second? Just on the €1,000 now, you thought about saying to your second child, would you think of taking a gap year?
Oh, yeah, we're very much saying that to her, you know, because just the space it out a little bit with the two of them and give them both a chance to maybe earn some money themselves to be able to pay part of the way themselves, because it's, you know, we happen, I mean, I think, with, you know, because it's not just the €1,000, it's the whole thing, like the accommodation is the major expense, and I'm sure everybody in the country has the same problem, you know.
And in the greater scheme of things, Geraldine, obviously taking or telling a child, would you like to take a DOS year and go off and develop, is not really the worst thing or the most onerous thing to have asked of you. But in the context that it's coming now, how has that conversation gone?
Well, I mean, it's something we've been talking about for quite a while anyway. Now, she is young. She's not 18 quite yet. So we have spoken about maybe it would be of benefit for her to do it. But she's gone through the whole process of electing what she wants to do. And she's very into what she's applied for. And she really wants to do it. And she's saying, why do I have to wait back? This is not fair.
Okay.
You know, You know, and even like yesterday when she was putting down Cork on the course, you know, there's a similar course in another, one of the, what used to be the ITs in another, a regional town in another county, but it's two counties away as well. You know, I said, well, maybe if you went for that course, you know, it'd be not as expensive in that town to get accommodation as it will be in Cork. You know, having spoken to somebody who's got a student there, and she said, oh, but Mum, like the course I want is in Cork. You know, so I mean, I was even going through the thought yesterday, thinking, well, I hope she doesn't get the points for the one that she put for
so she gets the one that doesn't cost as much. And is there
a little bit of the,
hang on a second, just because your one is the firstborn, why do they get to do what they want and I'm having a halt fixed to my gallop?
That was kind of mentioned, all right. Yeah, it was, in fairness, you know. But I mean, yeah, that was, you know, she did say that and she had that look like, you know, this is not fair. Why can't I, you know, but even like for my older daughter to go to college in Galway was hard for us as well, okay. Because, you know, we'd always thought, we live, I mean, if the courses they wanted to do were available more closely, like we're closer to Limerick City than we are to Galway or wherever, if the courses were available in Limerick, you know, they'd be able to commute and it would be a total different scenario. You know, scenario, they'd be able to live at home. But no, unfortunately, my two beautiful girls, neither of them have been able to find a course that they want to do in our local universities. So the courses they want are away from us and they will have to have accommodation as part of, you know, for 4 years each.
If you had known about this, if you had known about this before the general election, would you have been able to accommodate it now?
If I had known about this, I don't think that would have made any difference to me at this stage. But I did expect, you know, that they would continue with the €1,000 off the fees. I did expect that would continue this year.
And
even
why,
though,
why did you expect that? Because it was something that was in the ether during the election?
Well, I just thought they couldn't be so cruel as to take it away again, you know, to be honest, okay. You know. Yeah.
And how does it leave you feeling about this government?
Well, it makes me feel that, well, between that and, I mean, I think young people in this country have been let down wholesale. I think families have been let down. People are working very, very hard. Everything is very expensive. We've accepted more and more expense and more taxes over the years. You know, my youngest daughter was born in 2008, and that's the year that everything went crash with the economy. Her dad, my partner, was working for himself at the time in the construction industry. Okay. He had gone out on his own. He had just acquired a loan to renew get new equipment, and the whole thing fell flat, and we took a real hit then. So we are still suffering from that because we only managed to buy a house 6 years ago. So we still have a mortgage and will have for the next 6 years. And so with putting two girls to college and a mortgage, it's like having 2.5 mortgages, you know. That's why I wanted to get onto the point of the Susie grant. And I'm sure there's more people than just those affected in the same way.
We'll come back to the Susie grants, but let me bring in Hugh at this point. Hugh, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon.
What did you want to say?
I suppose I'm very cognizant of how difficult it is for parents to put their kids through college. But at the same time, I think we should recognise what we have. The level of fees that we pay in Ireland is actually very low. My brother over in the UK, his last child went to, when he was going through college, the fees in the UK were £9,000. In the US, we know that college fees over there are very, very significant too. It's not really the state. The state, it's not their responsibility to educate everybody and pay for everything. They provide a framework and they provide accessibility. And at 3,000, you get an awful lot for 3,000. And they do provide grants for people who don't earn enough to pay. Now, that doesn't take away from the fact that it's still a struggle. But I don't see how the government can be held responsible for this. They signal very clearly that these are one-off measures.
Well, they did also signal, at least Fine Gael did, signal before the election that this was something that was going to continue. So are people right to be angry? Or is it fair that they are angry that the government has changed course 180 degrees with a couple of weeks before the start of the next academic year?
Well, I think... I think definitely they are. And I think your other caller's point about talking about the state of affairs in England and in America, we don't live in England or America, and there are plenty of other countries around the world, and in Europe particularly, where education is third level education is not expensive, where it's provided free. As well as that, our young people are our future. And if the government needs to invest in our young people. That argument means nothing to me anyway about arguing about America. I chose not to live in America or England. I live here. I'm an Irish person. My children
okay.
need to do that.
Let Hugh back in on that one. This is not Britain. This is not America. This is Ireland, Hugh.
It is Ireland. And I still believe that 3,000 is a very, very good value. The government are investing in our children. And I don't mean this particular government, but governments in the past have invested very heavily in our children. They've put great emphasis on getting good courses in the STEM cells and have provided massive employment. Now,
okay, and the short notice, Hugh, is that good planning on the government's part?
I would think that is very poor planning on the government's part, but you have to look at a couple of things here. One is that they did very clearly say these were one-off measures.
They did say that, as we've already discussed, they also said that
some people gave
every reason to believe that they were going to continue. I'm afraid I am up against the clock, so I am going to say thank you very much to both of you and take my final commercial break.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Frank, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Philip.
Frank, when I'm running the world, I want you as my Minister for Budgetary Planning. You've done an amazing job preparing for your kids for third level.
Well, I don't know if we did an amazing job, but we had no choice to. One thing my father said when I was growing up, he said, education is no burden. He says, the only thing I'll give you in your life is an education, a third level education, and I got that. And my wife made the same commitment to our children, that we would give them an education, because the best thing you can do to get yourself a good wage and out of poverty is to have an education in this country.
And in the 60 seconds left in the programme now, it sounds like you had every I dotted and every T crossed and prepared to put the kids through college, but now along comes this news. And to what extent has it thrown your plans awry?
Well, it makes difficult. I mean, just listening to the people here, it makes things extremely difficult for everybody. And I suppose what really aggravates me is that Fine Gael made a commitment a number of years ago that they were going to phase out fees. Not alone had they not done that, they continue to increase them. A promise last year that perhaps they were going to be reduced, and now have increased them. Announced it on a Sunday afternoon when the kids are on holidays and can't protest about it. And people and parents haven't a chance to budget for it.
And they have to go up to come back down.
Well, they don't have to come up to come back down. The country is awash with money. We have the Apple billions. You know, we have more tax income at the moment than we've ever had. And apparently we can't spend it on something that has set this country up by educating our offspring.
All right, but that is where we are. I suspect we are going to be returning this tomorrow. Frank, thank you very much for your call.